Chapter 9. Oliver mingles with new associates. Going to a funeral for the first time, he forms an unfavorable notion of his master's business. Oliver, being left to himself in the undertaker's shop, set the lamp down on a workman's bench, and gazed timidly about him with a feeling of awe and dread, which many people a good deal older than he will be at no loss to understand. An unfinished coffin on black trestles, which stood in the middle of the shop, looked so gloomy and deathlike that a cold tremble came over him every time his eyes wandered in the direction of the dismal object, from which he almost expected to see some frightful form slowly rear its head, to drive him mad with terror. Against the wall were ranged, in regular array, a long row of elm boards cut in the same shape. Looking in the dim light, like high-shouldered ghosts with their hands in their breeches pockets. Coffin plates, elm chips, bright-headed nails, and shreds of black cloth lay scattered on the floor, and the wall behind the counter was ornamented with a lively representation of two mutes in very stiff neckcloths, on duty at a large private door, with a hearse drawn by four black steeds, approaching in the distance. The shop was close and hot. The atmosphere seemed tainted with the smell of coffins. The recess beneath the counter in which his flock mattress was thrust looked like a grave. Nor were these the only dismal feelings which depressed Oliver. He was alone in a strange place, and we all know how chilled and desolate the best of us will sometimes feel in such a situation. The boy had no friends to care for, or to care for him. The regret of no recent separation was fresh in his mind. The absence of no loved and well-remembered face sank heavily into his heart. But his heart was heavy, notwithstanding, and he wished, as he crept into his narrow bed, that that were his coffin, and that he could be lain in a calm and lasting sleep in the churchyard ground, with the tall grass waving gently above his head, and the sound of the old deep bell to soothe him in his sleep. Oliver was awakened in the morning by a loud kicking at the outside of the shop door, which, before he could huddle on his clothes, was repeated, in an angry and impetuous manner, about 25 times. When he began to undo the chain, the legs desisted, and a voice began. "Open the door, will yer?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the voice which belonged to the legs which had kicked at the door. "I will, directly, sir," apostrophe replied Oliver, undoing the chain and turning the key. "I suppose yer the new boy, ain't yer?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the voice through the keyhole. "Yes, sir," apostrophe replied Oliver. "How old are yer?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired the voice. 10, sir," apostrophe replied Oliver. "Then I'll whop yer when I get in," apostrophe said the voice. "You just see if I don't, that's all, my work a sprat," apostrophe, apostrophe, and having made this obliging promise, the voice began to whistle. Oliver had been too often subjected to the process to which the very expressive monosyllable just recorded bears reference, to entertain the smallest doubt that the owner of the voice, whoever he might be, would redeem his pledge most honorably. He drew back the bolts with a trembling hand and opened the door. For a second or two, Oliver glanced up the street and down the street and over the way, impressed with the belief that the unknown, who had addressed him through the keyhole, had walked a few paces off to warm himself. For nobody did he see but a big charity boy, sitting on a post in front of the house, eating a slice of bread and butter, which he cut in two wedges, the size of his mouth, with a clasp knife, and then consumed with great dexterity. "I beg your pardon, sir," apostrophe said Oliver at length, seeing that no other visitor made his appearance. "Did you knock?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "I kicked," apostrophe replied the charity boy. "Did you want a coffin, sir?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Oliver, innocently. At this, the charity boy looked monstrous fierce, and said that Oliver would want one before long, if he cut jokes with his superiors in that way. Pierre don't know who I am, I suppose, were Gus? Apostrophe apostrophe said the charity boy, in continuation. Descending from the top of the post, meanwhile, with edifying gravity. No, sir, apostrophe rejoined Oliver. I'm Mr. Noah Claypole, apostrophe said the charity boy, and you're under me. Take down the shutters, ye're idle young ruffian. Apostrophe with this, Mr. Claypole administered a kick to Oliver, and entered the shop with a dignified air, which did him great credit. It is difficult for a large-headed small-eyed youth, of lumbering make and heavy countenance, to look dignified under any circumstances. But it is more especially so, when superadded to these personal attractions are a red nose and yellow smalls. Oliver, having taken down the shutters, and broken a pane of glass in his effort, to stagger away beneath the weight of the first one to a small court at the side of the house in which they were kept during the day, was graciously assisted by Noah, who having consoled him with the assurance that he'd catch it, apostrophe condescended to help him. Mr. Sowerberry came down soon after. Shortly afterwards, Mrs. Sowerberry appeared. Oliver having caught it, apostrophe in fulfillment of Noah's prediction, followed that young gentleman down the stairs to breakfast. Come near the fire, Noah, apostrophe said Charlotte. I saved a nice little bit of bacon for you from Master's breakfast. Oliver, shut that door at Mr. Noah's back, and take them bits that I've put out on the cover of the bread pan. There's your tea. Take it away to that box, and drink it there, and make haste, for they'll want you to mind the shop. D'ye hear? Apostrophe, d'ye hear, work us? Apostrophe apostrophe said Noah Claypole. Lore, Noah. Apostrophe apostrophe said Charlotte, what a rum creature you are. Why don't you let the boy alone? Apostrophe apostrophe, let him alone. Apostrophe apostrophe said Noah. Why everybody lets him alone enough, for the matter of that. Neither his father nor his mother will ever interfere with him. All his relations let him have his own way pretty well. Eh, Charlotte? He. Apostrophe, oh, you queer soul. Apostrophe apostrophe said Charlotte, bursting into a hearty laugh, in which she was joined by Noah, after which they both looked scornfully at poor Oliver Twist, as he sat shivering on the box in the coldest corner of the room, and ate the stale pieces which had been specially reserved for him. Noah was a charity boy, but not a workhouse orphan. No chance child was he, for he could trace his genealogy all the way back to his parents, who lived hard by, his mother being a washerwoman, and his father a drunken soldier, discharged with a wooden leg, and a diurnal pension of twopence halfpenny and an unstateable fraction. The shopboys in the neighborhood had long been in the habit of branding Noah in the public streets, with the ignominious epithets of letters, apostrophe charity, and the like, and Noah had borne them without reply. But, now that fortune had cast in his way a nameless orphan, at whom even the meanest could point the finger of scorn, he retorted on him with interest. This affords charming food for contemplation. It shows us what a beautiful thing human nature may be made to be, and how impartially the same amiable qualities are developed in the finest lord and the dirtiest charity boy. Oliver had been sojourning at the undertaker some 3 weeks or a month. Mr. and Mrs. Sowerberry, the shop being shut up, were taking their supper in the little back parlor, when Mr. Sowerberry, after several deferential glances at his wife, said, my dear apostrophe, he was going to say more, but, Mrs. Sowerberry looking up, with a peculiarly unpropitious aspect, he stopped short. Well, apostrophe said Mrs. Sowerberry, sharply. Nothing, my dear, nothing, apostrophe said Mr. Sowerberry. Ugh, you brute. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mrs. Sowerberry. Not at all, my dear, apostrophe said Mr. Sowerberry humbly. I thought you didn't want to hear, my dear. I was only going to say apostrophe, oh, don't tell me what you were going to say, apostrophe interposed Mrs. Sowerberry. I am nobody, don't consult me, pray. I don't want to intrude upon your secrets. Apostrophe as Mrs. Sowerberry said this, she gave an hysterical laugh, which threatened violent consequences. But, my dear, apostrophe said Sowerberry, I want to ask your advice. Apostrophe, no, no, don't ask mine, apostrophe replied Mrs. Sowerberry, in an affecting manner. Ask somebody else's. Apostrophe here, there was another hysterical laugh, which frightened Mr. Sowerberry very much. This is a very common, and much approved matrimonial course of treatment, which is often very effective. It at once reduced Mr. Sowerberry to begging, as a special favor, to be allowed to say what Mrs. Sowerberry was most curious to hear. After a short duration, the permission was most graciously conceded. It's only about young Twist, my dear, apostrophe said Mr. Sowerberry. A very good-looking boy, that, my dear. Apostrophe, he need be, for he eats enough, apostrophe observed the lady. There's an expression of melancholy in his face, my dear, apostrophe resumed Mr. Sowerberry, which is very interesting. He would make a delightful mute, my love. Apostrophe, Mrs. Sowerberry looked up with an expression of considerable wonderment. Mr. Sowerberry remarked it, and, without allowing time for any observation on the good lady's part, proceeded. I don't mean a regular mute, to attend grown-up people, my dear, but only for children's practice. It would be very new to have a mute in proportion, my dear. You may depend upon it, it would have a superb effect. Apostrophe, Mrs. Sowerberry, who had a good deal of taste in the undertaking way, was much struck by the novelty of this idea, but, as it would have been compromising her dignity to have said so, under existing circumstances, she merely inquired, with much sharpness, why such an obvious suggestion had not presented itself to her husband's mind before. Mr. Sowerberry rightly construed this as an acquiescence in his proposition. It was speedily determined, therefore, that Oliver should be at once initiated into the mysteries of the trade, and, with this view, that he should accompany his master on the very next occasion of his services being required. The occasion was not long in coming. Half an hour after breakfast next morning, Mr. Bumble entered the shop, and supporting his cane against the counter, drew forth his large leathern pocketbook, from which he selected a small scrap of paper, which he handed over to Sowerberry. Aha! Apostrophe apostrophe said the undertaker, glancing over it with a lively countenance. An order for a coffin, eh? Apostrophe apostrophe, for a coffin first, and a parochial funeral afterwards. Apostrophe replied Mr. Bumble, fastening the strap of the leathern pocketbook, which, like himself, was very corpulent. Baton, apostrophe said the undertaker, looking from the scrap of paper to Mr. Bumble. I never heard the name before. Apostrophe, Bumble shook his head, as he replied, obstinate people, Mr. Sowerberry, very obstinate. Proud too, I'm afraid, sir. Apostrophe, proud, eh? Apostrophe apostrophe exclaimed Mr. Sowerberry with a sneer. Come, that's too much. Apostrophe, oh, it's sickening, apostrophe replied the beetle. Antimonial, Mr. Sowerberry. Apostrophe apostrophe, so it is, apostrophe squeezed the undertaker. We only heard of the family the night before last, apostrophe said the beetle. And we shouldn't have known anything about them then, only a woman who lodges in the same house made an application to the parochial committee for them to send the parochial surgeon, to see a woman as was very bad. He had gone out to dinner, but his prentice, which is a very clever lad, sent him some medicine in a blackened bottle, offhand. Apostrophe, ah, there's promptness, apostrophe said the undertaker. Promptness, indeed. reply to Beetle. But what's the consequence? What's the ungrateful behavior of these rebels, sir? Why, the husband sends back word that the medicine won't suit his wife's complaint, and so she shan't take it, says she shan't take it, sir. Good, strong, wholesome medicine, as was given with great success to two Irish laborers and a coal heaver, one a week before sent them for nothing, with a blackened bottle in, and he sends back word that she shan't take it, sir. As the atrocity presented itself to Mr. Bumble's mind in full force, he struck the counter sharply with his cane, and became flushed with indignation. Well, said the undertaker, I never did never did, sir. Ejaculated the beetle. No, nor nobody never did. But now she's dead, we've got to bury her. And that's the direction. And the sooner it's done, the better. Thus saying, Mr. Bumble put on his cocked hat wrong side first, in a fever of parochial excitement, and flounced out of the shop. Why, he was so angry, Oliver, that he forgot even to ask after you. Said Mr. Sowerberry, looking after the beetle as he strode down the street. Yes, sir, replied Oliver, who had carefully kept himself out of sight during the interview, and who was shaking from head to foot at the mere recollection of the sound of Mr. Bumble's voice. He needn't even taken the trouble to shrink from Mr. Bumble's glance, however, for that functionary, on whom the prediction of the gentleman in the white waistcoat had made a very strong impression, thought that now the undertaker had got Oliver upon trial the subject was better avoided, until such time as he should be firmly bound for 7 years, and all danger of his being returned upon the hands of the parish should be thus effectually and legally overcome. Well, said Mr. Sowerberry, taking up his hat, the sooner this job is done, the better. Noah, look after the shop. Oliver, put on your cap, and come with me. Oliver obeyed, and followed his master on his professional mission. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.